so happy to be joined now on the Shell Penzo Performance Line by the NBPA Executive Director, Michelle Roberts. Michelle, let's just start with one of the more obvious things that's been floating around the NBA and the testing for the coronavirus, and that's questions about that testing. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and some others feel that NBA players are getting preferential treatment. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's tough because it's sad, actually, that we find ourselves fighting over tests. And of course, we're doing this because of a scarcity that neither de Blasio or the league or the NBA or the players are responsible for. Let's set it straight, though. NBA players are not receiving tests that would otherwise be made available by, for example, the state of New York. And I think Adam went through this during his interview a couple of days ago. You know, the Oklahoma City team was tested by virtue of having been required to be tested by the state of Oklahoma. But a couple of things. Let's be clear. No one is suggesting, not an NBA player, not the league, not the teams, no one is suggesting that NBA players should jump to the front of any line and sacrifice those people who have greater risk of infection or, God forbid, death. That's not happening at all. What's happening is that, understandably, the entire country is distressed by the incredibly low, small number of available tests and is trying to find some reason and some entity or some people to blame. And sadly, on some level, the NBA players are being blamed. De Blasio should be frustrated. I'm a New Yorker. I live here. I'm also in my 60s. And I also am distressed that people like me, who presumably are at greater risk, don't have a level of availability that makes sense given the nature of this disease. But to point fingers at NBA players and suggest that they are irresponsibly being given a right to be tested is nonsense. The tests that the players have been able to receive have been pursuant to private testing and has not been by virtue of jumping ahead of any line. So, you know, I think a little bit of fact-checking is in order at this point.
Yeah, and fact-checking comes at a premium right about now, Michelle. I appreciate you providing clarity there. Let's pivot a little bit, talk about these players. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Adam Silver suggested in his interview with Rachel Nichols a charity game which would provide a diversion for the fans potentially. What is your reaction to something like that, and where's your comfort level lie in signing off on players participating in such a game before everyone is cleared to return to normalcy?
Let me say this. Every one of us is currently starved for NBA basketball. 3 weeks from now, we're going to be climbing the walls. So, I get that there is every reason to try to figure out some level of play, some level of return of play by the players. But I have maintained, and I think Adam has maintained, and we will continue to maintain, that first and foremost, anything we do has to be consistent with the health and safety of our players, the health and safety of the team staff, the health and safety of any arena employees, and, of course, the health and safety of our fans. If something consistent with all the health regulations can happen that doesn't pose any risk to all of those constituents, can be done, and it's basketball by the greatest basketball players on the planet, I'm down for that. I just think it's tricky, and I think that Adam would agree that it's going to be very difficult to figure out a way to do it safely and in compliance with all the occupancy rules and regulations that are being imposed by the various jurisdictions. But I'm with him. I'm not giving up on the ability for us to have some basketball in the next couple of months.
We're talking to Michelle Roberts, NBPA Executive Director here on Spain & Company, Sarah Spain, Jordan Cornette on ESPN Radio. Let's get to that then. There's also obviously discussions about reshaping the league season because of the events. I know Hawks CEO Steve Koonin suggested December to August instead of the current October to June. What are your thoughts about that idea of just pushing everything back, and what needs to happen in order to move forward with that?
Well, you know, ironically, before this whole thing transpired, there had been discussions among the league, the PA, our teams, and our players about ways of tweaking the season. You know, there was all this talk about a mid-season chip, and so again, ironically, there were conversations that were being had about ways to sort of change things up, mix things up. there's always been, as you guys know, some suggestion that the NBA season begin in December, pretty much after the conclusion of the NFL season. You know, and that voice is now being given greater voice because, you know, now we have an opportunity to talk about this. There aren't any games being played. We suddenly have all of this time on our hands. And so, you know, those conversations have been going on a little bit more frequently than they had been previously. I'm old, so I'm always one of the people that's accused of being a traditionalist. I mean, I've known NBA one way all of my life, and so I'm happy to have that remain the same. Having said that, I also know that I'm old, and so if there are new ways and interesting ways to innovate and make the game more palatable to our fans and, frankly, more palatable to our players, that's fine. I don't reject a shorter season. We all have to understand and appreciate that that means a reduction in revenue. So the conversations that are centered around changing the season or shortening the season, as you guys know, will ultimately also include some conversation about what that means to the bottom line, and we'll have to see.
No, Michelle, not old, wise, very wise is how I look
at that. A veteran.
Yes. Okay, I'll take that.
And a leader.
A locker room leader.
Yes, exactly.
There we go. I like that too.
So while we're laughing, I'm gonna take a dip here and change the mood a little bit and talk about worst case for sport. What if the NBA does not return this season? How are you preparing the players in the event that the league does have to cancel the season? You know, so many companies are out there on conference calls and maneuvering through this. Managing a league of so many players spread out over the entire country and so used to a certain routine and management, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, this is tough. I mean, we're talking about guys who have for years, you know, especially those that have been playing for a while, are accustomed to a routine that has them everywhere, traveling nonstop, being here, being there, understanding when the season's going to end, but virtually engaged in practice, playing, training, all that, and all of a sudden that's stopped. I mean, literally stopped, and not gradually stopped, but stopped in a way that nobody, certainly the players could have predicted. So the first thing they've got to become accustomed to is, you know, you're not leaving your market, or if you're leaving your market, then you go home, but you have to practice under very limited circumstances, and now you can't have access to the practice facility, and now we don't know when we'll be able to resume. And then I've got international players that, you know, like any one of us under these circumstances would want to be home with their families, and they're watching, you know, borders closing and airports diminishing. I won't use the words I would use when I was not on the air, but this is some stuff. Mm-hmm. And our players are, to their credit, adjusting, but it's a tough adjustment. If we lose the season, and I'll put aside the significant financial hit that the game is going to endure, just the psychological factors that the players have to undergo, that in the middle of it was going to be, I think, an exciting playoff run.
Oh yeah,
right. That all just comes to a halt. I don't even know how they are going to ultimately manage it. I know they will because they're tough guys, and of course they will. But every day I spend time talking to guys who are saying, you know, I'm not going to lose hope. I want to be optimistic. You know, let's see if we can salvage something. And I you know, bleed and cry with them for that. But this is unprecedented. And I know we'll get through it. I'm sure we'll get through it. But it's going to be tough. It's been tough for the last 9 days, and it's going to be tough for the next, you know, I guess 90 days. So this game is popular. Our fans are there. They're loyal, and I think the best sport on the planet. We'll be fine, but we'll be different.
Spain and Company, Sarah Spain, Jordan Cornette on ESPN Radio. Talking to Michelle Roberts, executive director of the NBAPA on the Shell Penzel Performance Line. You know, you mentioned the financial hit and cap space, future player salaries. All of that is affected due to the revenue sharing between players and owners in your sport. Makes it even tougher for you in terms of your job in helping players through this. What are you telling them about handling the uncertainty of the future, both financially and in regards to not really yet knowing exactly how much this might affect things like cap space and salary?
Well, we're telling them all we can know, and then we're telling them as best we can what the likely future looks like. What we can tell them that's a little bit more definitive is And frankly, the CBA helps in that regard. The collective bargaining agreement helps in that regard. There is language, there's a provision in the collective bargaining agreement that consists of a formula that lets a player know what percentage of his compensation he is at risk to lose for every game not played. So that's something that's a little bit more concrete that we can share with the players, have shared with the players, and our players have actually used, we've given them a calculator of sorts to figure out the worst possible scenario if the NBA terminates the regular season. So there's that level of certainty. But what's really uncertain is if we don't have the playoffs, what that much greater hit is going to mean in terms of BRI, basketball-related income, because that's how we're able to determine salary caps and the pool of money that's available to pay players, and contract sizes. And that's a little harder to measure. We're running models. The league is running models. It's all so speculative that no one trusts their models. But at the end of the day, we can all say this. If we lose the season, if we lose the playoffs, it's going to be big. How big, we're trying to figure out, but we know it's going to be big. And what I've done with the players is that get ready for it. So those guys that have contracts are a little bit, they've got a better sense of, they're in better shape than those who are going to be free agents in the next season, because the cap, one would reasonably predict, is going to go down. So contracts will go down. Hopefully we'll rebound, but for the next agent, next pool of free agents, this is a little bit of a challenge. Just don't know how much of a challenge, but I can't look a guy in the eye and say, don't worry, the gravy will be just as sweet tomorrow as it was yesterday. It's not. And that's why we're all so much engaged in hoping we can salvage some of the season or at least the playoffs.
Yeah, we talk about, free agent pool of players. How about an entirely new pool of players? Is the date Thursday, June 25th, comes to mind, is a guy who covered college basketball and news being broke of Anthony Edwards of Georgia, a potential first pick in the NBA draft, puts his name in. Well, he's most likely that top pick, but what about those underclassmen that aren't as highly regarded? They face a prospect of entering a draft without the possibility of a combine or an individual workout with these teams. So I know there's no SOP for this, naturally, Michelle, but what procedures could be potentially put in place to ensure that they have somewhat of a chance given the climate we're in right now?
Yeah, the first thing you think is, God, I hope these guys have a body of work that is available for teams to look at, for scouts to look at, because, given the restrictions that some of the jurisdictions are imposing on being able to even display your stuff is daunting. It's not impossible, I suppose, for someone to be able to do a one-on-one, to do a workout in front of, at a team facility with one person there watching, but the availability of being able to travel and have people see your work, if you're not one of the top 10 prospects, is going to be limited. As you guys know, the CBA does have a rookie scale, so those numbers are pretty much locked in. If you're not one of the guys on the rookie scale contract, then your ability to negotiate a contract is going to be diminished by two things. One, people will not have had as much of an opportunity to see your work, unless, again, you've got this great body of work out there. And then two, if the cap goes down, then the amount of money available to pay players, why do I keep saying that, is going to go down. So, if you're a top 10 prospect, it's probably not going to impact you too terribly much. But if you're someone who's kind of on the bubble, or your rank is kind of questionable, your opportunities to prove yourself are diminished. I don't know how we have a draft, not in the same way we've had a draft. Clearly, I got to check and see what Vegas is saying about the occupancy in terms of the size of the group that can be in one place at one time. If it's 50, we're screwed. If it's 200, we're screwed. You guys have been to pre-draft. Hundreds and hundreds of people are at pre-draft watching these draft prospects work out and all of that. So it's going to be a challenge. We'll figure it out. It's just going to look very, very different. There'll be a much smaller category of people that are eligible to be there to witness these guys, showing their stuff. But it's got to impact on a guy's ability to negotiate the best contract, because he won't have the ability to display his talents in the same way that we have allowed them to do that historically.
We're talking to Michelle Roberts. Go ahead.
It's a new normal.
Yeah, we're all adjusting. I feel like we might need to call the execs over at Zoom meetings and see if they can accommodate 500 players and staff for the draft. It's going to be one hell of a draft boardroom online.
You may not be far from what's going to have to happen.
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, I think we're using Zoom for everything at this point. Mm-hmm. Michelle Roberts, NBPA Executive Director with us here on Spain & Company, Sarah Spain, Jordan Cornette. Just a couple more for you. We thank you so much for your time. I know you're busy. I'm curious what the biggest source of frustration for your players is at this point. What are you getting the most calls and questions about?
Not being able to work out. I'm not kidding. It's the biggest complaint right now. I mean, because as you know, all of our practice facilities have been shut down. And players have been asked not to go to private facilities to work out. Of course, they're all shut down too, so they wouldn't even have that option. You know, a couple of our guys have venues within their own homes and they can work out, but that's not the case for all of our players. Many of our guys live in apartment buildings, and even I live in an apartment building, and my little teeny tiny gym has been shut down, so I know how it feels. You can go out and run, but that's not the same as getting access to trainers and treatment and individual instruction. That has been, for the last 48 hours, the single biggest complaint that I've gotten from players, followed by, frankly, our international players that just want to go home. It breaks my heart, because I know full well I would want to be around my family. I'm around my family during these times, and you know these guys are sort of in a limbo. Should I leave? If I leave, can I come back? Can I leave? Some of the countries have already shut the borders. It's been a tough 9-10 days.
You know, Michelle, you've always been so gracious in joining us. And the last time I believe we spoke with you, we talked about mental health and the the managing of it and monitoring of it and the great steps that you and Commissioner Silver have been taking to address that. As we talk about this, naturally, the increasing level of anxiety and the mental health within these players being knocked off their routine in fear for what's ahead. How do you guys address that or any of the otherwise anxiety-ridden things that probably present themselves?
Yeah, well, the team is consistent with a mandate that the league came down with. Each have mental health providers that are available. We as well have, in the event there were players that frankly did not want to have to go to their teams with any issues, have also a mental health network that's available. And I think it was last week we actually reached out to the players to remind them that, you know, if their anxiety gets to a point where they would like, need, desire to talk to someone, that we had folks available. So hopefully players are taking advantage of that if they need it. And then one of the things I've been saying to players is talk to each other. You can't hang out. You can't, you know, go to a bar together or anything like that. But, you know, call, text, just reach out to each other. So I know this, that some of our teams have been having group chats, and they're just talking to each other, lifting each other up. We've obviously encouraged them to contact us if they need. I've had a couple of really remarkable group chats with a couple of players and small groups of players. So what we're trying to do is suggest that we lean into each other. And, you know, this is a fraternity of brothers, and they're doing that. It's tough. They're young. As I say, most of them have never gone through anything like this in their lives when they were not able to play basketball. Basketball is what they do. But slowly but surely, they're managing to adjust. It's not easy, but I think it's getting easier in some ways. I just cross my fingers and knock on wood every day.
And thankfully, we're in a time where we do have connectivity via technology, and where those young guys are certainly used to using their screens and watching TikToks and having Zoom happy hours and all the other stuff. It's Spain & Company, ESPN Radio, Sarah Spain, Jordan Cornette. Last couple for Michelle Roberts, your executive director of the NBPA. I'm curious what contact you've had with the players who've tested positive.
Not with everybody, because one of the things that I've not wanted to do was suggest that there's anything special about this. You know, there's no stigma to that. Our staff, somebody at the NBPA has talked to every one of them. I've talked to a couple, and you know what's great about it is I worried about some of the negative stuff I was seeing in social media, especially with respect to Rudy. And the good news is that they have been able to sort of push through that. They're fine. Again, these are the healthiest people on the planet, right? I mean, these guys are in the best shape in the world, and then they're young and they're strong, and so they're fine. Not a single one that I'm aware of is symptomatic, and thank God for that. So they're good. But what I love the most about them is rather than feeling sorry for themselves or being resentful, what they're doing is using their voices and their platforms to say, I'm great, but tell you what, stay away from people, and follow the CDC recommendations, wash your hands, don't mess with grandma. I mean, all the things that you would want them to say, they're saying. And so, we're good. There'll be more. I always tell people, I'm sitting here, I'm probably infected because half of us are infected.
Yeah,
so
don't
trip and don't freak out if you find out that you are. Don't ask to be tested unless you're symptomatic. And in that regard, the concern about health is not as pronounced. I mean, except the guys that get it. I may be fine. I may not be. But what I should be is just keeping away from people that are vulnerable. So it's tough, but they're trying to stay at home.
And Michelle, this will be our final question for you. For all those out there, and you've been so gracious with your time once again, for all those out there, the fans that are just so anxious for more basketball to come out there, with everything that you've shared with us today, what would be your parting shot to send to them while they sit there and wait in anticipation for what their lives will become in the future, but also for the return of sport that gives them such promise and happiness?
What I would say, and this is true, no matter who the stakeholders are in basketball, no matter the differences we've had and will have yesterday and tomorrow, everybody's on the same page. We all want to get the games back on. And when you've got that sort of unity, right, of purpose and mission, that suggests to me that we're going to succeed. So we're in the desert now, but everybody is holding hands, and that's my little virtual vision. We're all holding hands and trying to get to the same place. And it seems to me that if everybody has the same goal, we probably have a pretty good chance of achieving it. That ball will bounce soon, I guarantee
you. I would feel very confident with you as my leader if I were in the NBA, brilliant leadership on your part and just amazing insight on this. Thank you so much for giving us some time, Michelle. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no, my pleasure. You guys have a great weekend, and wash your hands here.